This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Doc and the Guru podcast. Gordon, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really enjoying the kind of momentum that we're getting. I'm sorry, did I use the wrong brand name there in the show? But yeah, looking forward to it. And I think, again, just thanks to all those people who have participated by posing questions, nominating subject matter for us, and those who are subscribing. So yeah, looking forward to another really good session with Outurance this morning.
Yeah, Carl O from Outurance, CMO. Carl, how are you doing?
Hello, Doug. I'm well and yourself?
Yeah, and I haven't seen you for a bit, and I know you joined Outurance about 8 or 9 months ago, so we'll chat a little bit about that. But just before we get into it, Gordon, just to echo your point earlier, thanks for all those questions and interaction. And as we've always said, you know, the podcast is not a one-way thing. It's a dialogue. It's a chat. It's about people getting involved in marketing, media, and everything in between. So please, if you're out there and you're keen to find out more, and today will be no different. We're talking to a massive brand, Outurance, and Carl, who runs the marketing portfolio. But I mean, from massive brands to small brands, from challengers to market leaders, everything in between, you know, it's the Doc and the Guru and all things marketing and media and all related.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So again, without taking more time on the intro, Carl, welcome. Outurance, I mean, it's a household name. It's one of the biggest spending advertisers in the country. I looked in preparing for this podcast at the Nielsen report of last year in brands and branding. For those of you who have got the book, you can look it up, the top spending advertisers. I think you guys were at fourth position with a big chunk of change that you guys are spending. And a lot of it testimonial type ads. Let's talk about that, Carl, in terms of the well-known testimonial ads. Are they effective or are they irritating?
I suppose you can ask different people and they all have a different answer to that. To answer the question directly, just on that question, it does work for us. The testimonial stuff do really, really work. It generates a really good call to action at the end of the ad. But also what it does, people associate themselves within an age band or an age group. Mm. So if you think about the Katlego ads, you know, Katlego is that really famous guy that we've now made even more famous, that has always been famous. Mm. He's a wonderful actor in that ads. And the process that we go through is actually getting real clients. They're all Outurance customers. They've been on the book, they've bought a policy with us, and we then go and sort of get these guys out of the archives, and we we ask them if they want to perform an ad. So what we do is we try to get a nice split in terms of the demographic profile, what it does. Also looking at age, looking at location. I think it's important to do that. And what we do then is they've got specific vehicles that are the big sellers in the country. So people associate with a Toyota Corolla. And the combination of all of that really, really works for us. Now, to be honest with you, from a pure marketing or brand advertising perspective, that on its own would, I think, over time, probably, maybe kill is a strong word, but it probably must and will diminish the brand value over time. So we do run brand ads intertwined in that. And we allocate a fair portion of spend on TV and radio, etc., just on pure brand ads to just get the feel and the goodwill of the brand out there. So that, but also then the overall marketing mix is important. We're not just a TV brand. We do a lot on TV. Obviously, we do spend a lot of money there. We do radio. We've got exhaustive outdoor strategy that goes with it. Our outdoor strategy is pretty much all brand related, so no call to action on any of those outdoor ads, where I see some of the competitors do some of that, and it might work for them. But then we also get into the sponsorship space, so they all build on the brand feel, where these are the hard-working ads that make the phone ring the next morning. Obviously, we've got a huge call center. It's like a hungry beast, It's and I get measured by that. If that call center is quiet, then obviously everybody looks at me again, but it's a combination, I always say advertising is I'm probably giving away a bit of my age. Advertising is pretty much like those synthesizers in the days when we grew up, that hi-fi with that massive synthesizer where you've got a treble and a bass and a mid, and there's like, I don't know, 40 knobs that you push up and down. So there's not one big lever in marketing that's actually going to do it, so it's not just the Katlego direct call to action profile kind of ads that's going to do it, but it's a little bit of a brand here and a little bit of something else and sponsorship on other media. So it's about getting the mix right. And over time, we spend a lot of effort in measuring what is the optimal levels and getting that right. That's actually more important than anything. Reach and frequency, an effective reach and frequency is actually what we do target. And if you got that mix right, I think the leads would come in with good quality creative that the customer can associate with.
So that reach and frequency thing, that's my cue, right, to talk media. I mean, typically you would associate reach and frequency and particularly effective frequency and effective reach with kind of bursts of activity. So you do a burst, you measure its optimal performance over a month. But I get a sense more that your ads are just running on a continuous basis. How often do you track? I mean, is it literally – are you in terms of your attribution model, are you tracking it sort of ad by ad? Are you reporting media on a hourly basis, daily basis? I mean, I had a discussion the other day with a competitor where I was trying to point out that the concept of a quarterly review when it comes to this kind of product is obsolete. You need literally real time tracking. How do you go about tracking what's working, what's not, and when have you hit a kind of a plateau and then you introduce? You talked about different people. You introduce a different variant. So it's a boyki and a bucky versus some cute kid and a VW Golf. When do you learn that the one curve is diminishing and the other one needs to kick up?
Well, during the month, it's pretty much we track leads as they come in off the sources. Now, obviously, we've got a big social media digital play, and I think the combination of that works well. So big focused search play, Google, the Facebook display stuff, all of that stuff gives you a sort of immediate response, and those kind of things gets amplified as we see the effect of spend on the traditional media pick up and go down. But what we've learned over time is that burst strategies for our brand doesn't really work. And why we say that is because you need to be top of mind when the consumer is in the buying space. And that could be any time. So bursts don't really work for us. So even December, which is normally a flat month from advertising perspective, people are on holiday and whatever, we try to keep top of mind awareness, because that January when they come back and they start thinking about how do I save money, they need to be top of mind. So for us, it's about a top of mind strategy. So sort of a continuous effective spend that would target a effective reach and frequency. So we review it, or we check it every sort of after every month once the report starts coming in. We check that just to see if we're still in line with our strategy, but we don't jig that very often during the month. And obviously, you know, TV booking schedules 2-3 months in advance, and we do it all in-house, you know. So we book and make sure we spend X amount of money, gets X amount of spots during the day that we target, and make sure that that is in place. When that's in place, the rest starts falling into place.
Yeah, that's very much in line with the Ehrenberg Bass thinking, which is coming out of Australia now, which is kind of governing this continual presence. The brand awareness thing is interesting. The fact that you're using out of home still is a brand awareness thing. It's intriguing for me that sophisticated mapping and modeling like you've got, which has got social media and tracking algorithms and that, and you still come back to that old conclusion that out of home can do a brand job for you. That is old-fashioned thinking, which still seems to work.
It does do a job, and old-fashioned thinking even more now, so with load shedding, you know. So people don't see our TV ads all the time. It's becoming a bit of a big problem for us, and speaking to some of our media partners, they all sit in the same position that we do, and how do they justify prices or rates at this moment in time with continuous load shedding, and stage two load shedding in the evenings could be quite high. So, you know, I think radio is playing a bigger role these days, and I think and I see brands playing a harder, taking a harder stance on radio and doing a little bit more there. And while you're driving on that highway, we like the big boards, you know, so it's this big.
Yeah, they're very visible.
Visible. And with the right creative, I think it's another point where you just see the brand out there.
Yeah, look, I mean, don't want to hog the conversation, Doc, but I mean, I think what I do like about that Arturance out of home stuff is it's designed for out of home. One of my big concerns on out of home is you've got people designing billboards as if they're websites. You can't have 27 points of entry on a website. So I do love the simplicity of the billboards. Doc, I know you on this brand than you
did. No, absolutely. And I think, Gordon, I mean, not only Carl, I know you guys do a lot more than just vehicle insurance. But, I mean, one of the obvious things is if I listen to the radio in the car, and you spoke about radio as a medium, and then whilst you're driving, there the billboards. So I think, you know, if you look at it in terms of, and obviously we're not justifying your strategy, you know, you guys are quite comfortable. Just from a rationalization point of view, that would make sense. Carl, just an interesting point though, and I think maybe people picked up when you said you do your own media in-house. You also do your own creative, so you've taken your whole shop in-house at Arturance. Let's just talk a little bit about that. Why? When did it happen? And what was the thinking behind it?
Well, it's been in place for quite a few years, probably about 6-7 years that we've going that route, and we're going bigger and bigger in it. Obviously, what we've done is we've gone and picked out, let's start off on the creative side of things, picked some really strong executive creative directors out of the industry, even famous guys that have won Cannes Awards, etc. Rui Alves, Bryn Puchert, you know, it's known people. We've brought them in house, and I think what it does, it gives us the ability that they contextually understand the brand a lot better. And they start learning what works and what doesn't work. So that's the first thing. The other thing is the turnaround time is massively enhanced for us in the way we do it. Our velocity, and obviously because of our high media spend, we need to have fresh content in all the time. So for us to, in previous lives, I had agencies that were highly effective. You know, I loved working with a lot of them, but your velocity, because it's so high, you continuously need to think about the next one. What's coming next? What's coming next? And having them in-house, you can manage it like a resource manager. Yeah. You know, so it's not so you don't do a massive creative brief and a strategy and all of that stuff. So because it's inherent, they, after a while, if they don't get the strategy, then, you know, then there's something wrong. You know, so they've got the strategy, they know what worked, and they then go with a creative angle to find out that new great thing. So that is on the big conceptual stuff. Then We've got some other executive creative directors that focus on print and do the extension off the main TV into our print, outdoor, etc. Nicole Benikos is in that space, and then Chris Potter runs our digital side of the creative side and the strategy associated to that. So, and they've got a team that would now go and build and create all the executions online, you know, so many banners to have the rotation and everything. Mm-hmm. So from a creative perspective, it works well. They do also all the internal stuff, all the staff comms, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. so we tend to get the ability right to amplify the brand and the identity, and the CI gets controlled quite nicely within those ranks. So that works very well for us. And then right next to them sits the media team. And there's a traditional media team that does the TV, radio, print, outdoor, etc. bookings. So they do the planning, the strategy, the planning. They do the booking. They do the contracting. We do the negotiations. We do all of that stuff in-house with the agency, with the media partners. Same on the online space, you know. So, and we do everything directly on the Google platform, on the Facebook platforms, etc. So we've got a lot of control. We measure, obviously, because it's in-house, we try to measure a little bit different. So you'll see that we do use short codes and those kind of measurements, which gives you a highly effective ability to track performance. Obviously, inbound calls are a little bit more difficult to track because of the subjectivity. You know, so the agent might ask the person, where did you see the ad? And they would recall, it was the billboard, you know, but it could have just been the TV. And I know you're going to ask me the question about attribution, and I'm probably not going to have a perfect answer on that because you don't know what the attribution really worked well. But I think that if with a pervasive media strategy, always on strategy, it's there and it happens.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I love the use of the word velocity. I don't think I've heard, you know, that phrase used in advertising ever. Advertising velocity, which is great, the speed at which things are happening. You can't kind of have long, kind of, you know, slow cooking stuff going on. And I'm just intrigued, though, from a media perspective, I get the in-house thing. I mean, Procter & Gamble said it when they took their media in-house. You know, we know more about buying and negotiating than anybody else on the planet. So I get that. Creatively, though, if Carl's my boss and Carl says do it this way, a little less, leeway for me to say, Carl, I honestly really think you're doing this wrong. But if I'm the agency, I might have a little more latitude. How do you manage, you know, or give space for people to push back within that corporate culture to be able to challenge something other than, you know, rather than just implementing it?
You know what? I think that's more entrenched in the way that OutSurance does things and the overall company culture. It's a very inclusive culture. It's not an autocratic management style. It's open. We test and fail often. And it's okay. And the buy-in for a new ad campaign happens on all levels. It's not just me making the final call. It goes up to the CEO. He checks it. He's happy with it. And then we distribute it even further. So from that perspective, it's all-inclusive, and we all carry the brunt if it doesn't work, you know, so because things don't work.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
On the agency side, and I don't want to knock an agency, but what agencies do, they do this long strategy, you know. So, and previous life I was in a bank, you know. So when McKinsey says you do it this way because the strategy says everybody does it. And I also don't want to knock McKinsey, but the research on it becomes so solid that you can't question that. That's even more difficult to question, you know. So, and that then sort of just happens. And normally what happens is any new creative campaign gets presented and there's five examples from YouTube, and you are so preconditioned when you see that creative that it all looks wonderful, you know, and then the ad gets created. And many of them work phenomenally, and I've been involved and happy to be involved in with many awesome creative agencies that created wonderful ads. But you also, you know, get swayed a little bit by it. When it's in-house, I think it's real. You know, it's not just a retainer that's at risk or whatever and smooth talk or whatever. These guys live and eat, and they share the responsibility that I share. As a CMO, I must deliver X amount of leads. That creative guy feels it. If it's not coming in, he feels it as well. So they think about it cohesively like that. And back to the culture. I think the culture is there. We won't get it right all the time. We try to get it right all the time, but it doesn't happen. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, Carl, you know, I mean, I'm no expert on outsurance, but certainly culture is an issue that Gordon and I have spoken about in previous shows and a few weeks ago. And it's such a critical part of any business is to make sure that what you put out there to the public is actually what you live yourself. And I've certainly heard in talking with people around outsurance in preparing for the show is that they say that there is that definite congruency. So well done. And I know it's not an easy thing and it's an always on, much like your advertising, culture isn't always on business and you've always got to grow and build on it. So well done on that. So just also, Gordon, we also spoke a few weeks back about that whole thing Carl's talking about now, the pain and the joy of both sides of the equation. In other words, the creative and agencies taking pain and joy when things go badly or well, and the client the other way around. We've all worked with big agencies, and I'm not saying the agencies don't take the pain. That's not what, and I don't think he's saying it either. But what you're saying is you're just bringing them a little bit closer to the engine of the business, you know. So it's not a downstream supplier or partner, but it's actually, you know, in the engine room and rolling up your sleeves. Now, I can only assume that they're part of your strategy initially. It's not a document that gets delivered that they then have to read. It's something that's co-created.
Absolutely. It definitely happens like that. So the creative guys are actually part of my management team. So it's not, there's not a creative director that's the boss. Those four executive creative directors are part of my management team. So they sit in, we talk about staff, we talk about performance on media and return on investment and leads and all of those kind of things. And we talk a lot about the creative. And everybody's sort of drawn into it, you know. So those creative guys are not the guys just gets fed something right at the end. Yeah. They in the creation part very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I really have enjoyed. You've talked about, you know, if I don't generate leads, I'm in trouble kind of thing. But somewhere in there as well, you've also talked about there's a point when you recognize you need to do the brand building. Where how do you find that magic point? I mean, you know, between sort of lead generation, which tends to suggest short term thinking, and the brand love and the brand building, which tends to be a longer-term play. Very few people manage that. They seem to be one or the other. How do you walk that line?
It's probably try and test over time. You know, I think the brand can be built through lead generation creative as well. So we don't skimp or don't just put something quick and nasty into the market. It's all very considered. The production quality is of high quality. So I think that does a job for brand building in any case, you know. So if that's the sort of the starting point, then the true brand stuff, the nice stories and the you know, the nice customer experiences or whatever it might be, becomes so much easier. And then the two work close with each other. You can easily then probably put a call to action on the brand ad and vice versa. Sure. You know, so then it's not so separate, and that's what we try to do. Look, on a media spend, one would, you know, you can run econometric models and say, well, we're spending too little on brand or too much on brand. We've sort of got to a percentage of our total media spend that works for us. And I don't think, again, it's just on the brand spend in terms of TV. It's the pointsman that we have that does a massive job for our brand and brand love. It's our rugby ref and our soccer ref sponsorship, which is a brand play, you know. So that guy that sits there on a Saturday afternoon and he watches, I don't know, the Lions play Sharks, and he sees the ref there in the middle of the field, and he's got that good feeling about where I am in life and I'm having a nice beer and whatever, and he sees outsurance there, I think it connects as a brand as well, you know. And Pointsman has been wonderful for us. Obviously there's some issues with some of the components of the Pointsman, not saying it's definitely not our fault, it's just political stuff that's caused some hiccups there. But it's, again, it's not just TV brand should be brand. That's not the case. It's the sponsorship leg, call it what you want, that plays a major role also.
Yeah, I think just, you know, Carl, just, and you mentioned Pointsman, I think that is such an overt helping out phenomenon that you guys started a long, long time ago. What is the latest with Pointsman? I think, you know, I've read it's on and it's off and it's got to go to tender. What is the latest on that?
Oh, my goodness. I can go a couple of routes, the political correct way or just as it is. But in any case, we've been running Pointsman for 13 years. There's two major contracts, the one with Tshwane Metro and the one with Johannesburg City. And we run it as such. We've got an independent third-party company that we sponsor, and they run it. So they go and do contracting. They do the service levels. Obviously, we're an assurance company. We don't want to, you know, get people up and teach them how to ride motorbikes. But in any case, so the Pointsman, so that's how it's structured. The one fundamental from the Pointsman perspective, which for us has always been one of the features, is that everybody they employ shouldn't be previously employed, you know. So we've created jobs, so many jobs, these guys on the motorbike. So that's nice. It's a CSI kind of thing. And you know what? I think the cities have in a dire need of these kind of services because of load shedding and whatever the other stuff might be. So I think from our perspective, we've done a lot. Now, it's been going for a long time. A couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, the city of Johannesburg said, well, you know, it can't just be awarded, even though there's no money flowing. So there's no money ever between us and the city. They said, let's take it to tender, get other people to bid for it. And that in itself, for me, is weird. And that process would just sort of muddled along for quite some time. Eventually to a case where our contract ran out. The extensions came, and every 2-3 months it got extended. But you can't run a business like that because we've got people that we employ, etc. And eventually the contract ended. We had to then scale down, cut all the Joburg guys out of the business, and, you know, obviously they were on contract basis, but suddenly those people don't have jobs. And now the city want to revive it. We are very keen to participate again. I think it's a great value proposition for us as a brand, but also giving back to the community. I think it's really needed. So we are very, very keen to participate again, but obviously with some sort of rules. We want to be in it for a long time. You know, so I cannot sit there with a contract that's going to expire or renewed every 2-3 months. That's impossible to run a business like that. You employ people, staff, clothing, motorbikes, etc. So that's sort of where we are. The Tshwane one is going perfectly. Nothing wrong with that. And I think we've just got a new 3-year renewal on that one. But the city of Joburg one is still up in arms. And there's now, we've been invited to put a proposal forward. So things might happen. Yeah. We hope so. We really hope so.
I would have to believe the insurance Pointsman, you know, contributes to the brand. I certainly have a favorable disposition because of that kind of initiative. Do you track it? Can you see? Is there a line of sight, or is it just something you do by intuition?
We just do that by intuition. Yeah, there's not a tracking behind that. And we've been doing it for so long, so it's become synonymous with the brand. I think we own it, which is great. Yeah.
And I think it's one of those, you know, it's one of those things that is so necessary for all those reasons you mentioned, Carl. So, you know, again, you know, from our side, and I think maybe Gordon's nodding, so we wish you well in hopefully, you know, getting re-awarded that and one can move forward and do your bit for the country, you know, because a lot of companies do CSI initiatives that I'm not sure they just tick box exercises. You know, they probably feel good on the day and but it's like chewing gum. I mean, eventually there's no more flavor, you know, where you've got to get something that is sustainable and certainly something that has been going for such a long time and so prominent, good for you, but also good for the motorists in terms of traffic flow, etc.
Yeah, and the chewing gum, you know, be surprised at how long chewing gum keeps its flavor. So I don't know if I should go down this route, but I you know, like Donald Trump misspeaks. I mislistened this morning, I think, because I was hearing the new payoff line or something like Chencha Daideng, whatever. But I mislistened because I kind of heard Ching Ching, which is actually the last thing that you want me to hear. Is that something you're aware of? Who picks that up?
It's definitely Chencha Daideng. It's a township language, and those words come from. And look, I'm Afrikaans, so I battle with understanding all of those nuances. But you know what? We involve staff as well, and we'd like to get these payoff lines going, and we invite staff to to put that forward. And this thing came from staff, just as the previous one, we had Chacha and Kenako Yagago was the previous one. So the staff proposed that there's a voting kind of thing, and the guy that's done that, he's a bit of a hero in that space. But we also, it's also a catchy thing, you know. So Change a Dai Ding is quite catchy.
So again, just as we begin to kind of wrap it up, how do folks get in touch? Well, obviously, if I want to get a policy, I'll go online. But I mean, with you, generally speaking, if I am a media partner out there, how do I get in touch with you? Can you just track you through CMO on the website?
Yeah, look, I'm on LinkedIn.
Oh, you've got a social, you're on LinkedIn, so we can message you on LinkedIn and get you involved via that route.
Yeah.
And then more selfishly, we had, last week we had the AMASA Advertising Media Association guys in here, primary objective there being training. I would love to have someone like yourself addressing agency, media agencies, to say, look, this is what we do. This is why we think we're better at you than doing it. And this is what you need to learn. Would you be available? Because I think it would be a huge thing for people to understand what they're up against.
Look, the model works for us. You know, so I don't think it's going to work for every single company. There's a couple of things. We do spend quite a substantial amount of money, so that makes the cost absorption of the resources to do the media stuff make sense. Same as with the creative. So that's the first part. Because of the high media spend, our velocity in terms of new creative needs to be high. So that makes it all, you know. So I wouldn't say any smaller company should just go out and do that. I think there's agencies out there that are exceptional, you know. So creative agencies that would do a massive job in terms of amplifying or lifting existing brands. I think we've got to that stage where it makes sense for us over the last couple of years. We didn't start there. Some companies are moving towards that, but they're going to fail because, you know, to get Google, just that platform humming, you need some serious capacity behind that, you know. So, and that's where agencies are good, you know, because they're shared resources and it's going to cost a lot less. So it will work for some and it won't for other. But yeah, willing to share our views.
Carl, thanks for coming in. I've really enjoyed it. Fascinating. And Doc, I'm going to leave it to you to wrap up.
Yeah, thanks, Gordon. Carl, again, as I say, always nice seeing you and chatting. And thanks for your openness and frankness. You know, it's, as I said, such a prominent brand and so many lessons that one could learn. And as you say, sometimes it's what to do and sometimes what not to do. So, you know, just the in-house agency is a big example of sometimes that's what other brands should not do. So, you know, the lessons are both sides.
A lot of it is try and learn and test and fail and then sort of take a new route. It's working for us.
But it's great, though, that your culture allows for that, you know, Carl, because a lot of companies are fear-based culture, an autocratic culture, top-down culture, a culture where if you fail, you're gonzos, you know, and so you're almost too desperate and you get into a state of desperation to just do something. Whereas, you know, what I'm hearing from you, it's very different. You're saying it's a participative, open culture.
It's very flat, you know, and the ability to speak to people at all levels, even to the CEO, is... You just walk up to the, you know, it's open door policy. We don't even have offices in the building, you know. So you walk up to the CEO and says, "I've got this new idea concept. What do you think?" And that's how you move forward. So the turnaround time, the approval process, and the inclusion process is different. And it works for us.
Well, as you say, you know, sometimes it's horses for courses. You need to find out what works for you. And you know, Gordon, as we've said in previous weeks as well, sometimes you know the skill, you have to know what you know and what you don't know, and then close that gap in terms of skill. So, I mean, clearly you guys through, trial and error amongst other things and science have found out what works for you. Carl, again, in closing, thanks very much from our side for the time you've taken. And then for the listeners out there, please get hold of Arturance either on their web directly or on one of our platforms to find out more about the lessons you can learn. Participate in the conversation, as Gordon and I always say. We're open to discussion, dialogue. Thanks for all the questions we've got so far. We welcome more. And from our side, we're only trying to improve the industry for the greater whole. So again, Gordon, I'll catch you next week.
Catch you next week. And, you know, in the old advertising tradition of steal with dignity, share with a smile, with Doc and Guru podcast, you always get something out.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.